I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, sparring with China. Secretary of State Antony Blinken wraps up his trip to the communist country. We have analysis of the high-level meetings. Abortion agenda. A new proposal from the White House is receiving rare bipartisan criticism. We're on Capitol Hill. Fighting back. What the governor of Florida is saying about the Biden administration's proposed changes to women's sports. And name-calling. Catholic schools feature prominently in the first round of the NFL draft. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of Our Lady of Good Counsel. Our top story tonight, the Biden administration responds to troubles around the world. Secretary of State Antony Blinken just wrapped up a trip to communist China, where he had a stern warning for their leaders. And U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin rallies around Ukraine's allies to defend against Russia. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, as President Joe Biden deals with the unceasing wars in Gaza and Ukraine, there's also the ongoing strain between China and the U.S. playing out on the world stage, including China's support for Russia and its invasion of Ukraine. Now, the president's top diplomat, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, says, quote, Russia would struggle to sustain its assault on Ukraine without China's support.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken meets directly with Chinese President Xi Jinping, Blinken raising concerns that China is helping Russia with military supplies and warning it threatens Ukrainian and European security.
As we've told China for some time, ensuring transatlantic security is a core U.S. interest. In our discussions today, I made clear that if China does not address this problem, we will.
Blinken issued the warning as China aligns itself with Russia. President Vladimir Putin says he's planning to visit China again in May. And while U.S. lawmakers just okayed a $95 billion foreign aid package, including $61 billion for Ukraine to defend itself from Russia's invasion, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin held another meeting with Ukraine's allies.
Ukraine's struggle for freedom matters to us all. If Ukraine fell under Putin's boot, Europe would fall under Putin's shadow.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky seeking Patriot missiles to create an air shield against further Russian missile attacks also addressed the group.
If we in Ukraine had not received your help with weapons, and if your countries had shown indifference to the destiny of our people, the world would definitely be different.
Later, Secretary Austin held a Pentagon press conference, which included questions about the war in the Middle East, where efforts to free the hostages and reach a ceasefire agreement continue, while a possible new Israeli offensive focused on Rafah remains a major concern for the U.S.
Stop it.
And Secretary Austin praised what he called Israel's significant ability to defend itself after Iran fired missiles and drones at it earlier this month, most never making it through.
Now, what the Iranians learn, I'm not really sure, but what they should learn is that, first of all, their systems don't work as advertised.
Separately tonight, during an interview with Howard Stern, President Biden, who returned to the White House earlier today, he told Stern, the entertainer, he'd be happy to debate former President Donald Trump. And Trump says he'll debate Biden anytime, any place. Of course, we'll see if the debate ever takes place. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And joining us now to talk more about Secretary of State Antony Blinken's three-day trip to China is Steve Yates, global strategist and senior fellow and chair of the China Policy Initiative with the America First Policy Institute. Steve, great to have you back on. A lot to get to, but first, I want to get your thoughts on Secretary Blinken's visit to China, his second trip to the PRC in less than a year.
Well, unfortunately for Secretary Blinken, I think it was somewhat doomed at the outset because the United States was coming with a long list of warnings that are justifiable but are overdue in many respects. And the Chinese engaged in some pretty clear public posturing, saying that they had some warnings back for the United States to respect their red lines and to not proceed with the TikTok legislation and a few other things on their list. So it seemed like this was a visit that was not likely to lead to a breakthrough. And it looks as though Secretary Blinken read from his points and the Chinese leaders read from theirs. And I haven't seen any real measurable progress in the outtakes.
Yeah, and Steve, when Secretary Blinken touched down in China on Wednesday, it was the same day, as you know, that President Biden signed a bill that included billions of military aid to Taiwan and a push to have China divest TikTok. And as Blinken stepped onto the runway, one thing that was notably missing is the red carpet that's customarily rolled out for dignitaries. Steve, how significant do you think that is, if at all, and what do you think that may signal?
Well, it's mostly signaling to China's domestic audience. The people of China are very well trained to watch for the subtleties and not so subtleties about ways that Chinese leaders grip and grin and show respect or disrespect to their guests. So the lack of red carpet, making Secretary Blinken sit to the side instead of face to face, not holding his hand while shaking for the cameras, all these are little subtle slights to show that he is lower rank and that he may not be seen in that context as a close friend.
Yeah, and also, as we mentioned, Blinken said ensuring transatlantic security is a core U.S. interest, making clear that if China does not address the problem, the U.S. will. So what do you think the U.S. could or should do?
Well, this is really problematic because, of course, China's support for Russia is not recent. It's been going through this entire conflict, and it's taken basically 2+ years for the administration to draw the linkage and issue a warning. So it's kind of hard for the Chinese to believe their ears if we say we're serious now. And also, I think from a Chinese point of view, they've been killing Americans in the numbers like hundreds of thousands with fentanyl and other things. And I think they're probably surprised that we're not pressing these kinds of sanctions for our own grievances. If we're not for our own people, why would we take risks for the Ukrainians?
And quickly, before I let you go, Steve, overall, what do you think will come from this visit, or what do you hope will come from it?
I think the administration was having the visit to try to buy time, to try to lay down markers, to communicate to the American audience and perhaps to our allies that they are on their brief. Unfortunately, there's two sides to this equation, and China gets to make decisions. And for now, I haven't seen any change in Xi Jinping's leadership direction of being fairly aggressive with his neighbors and with the United States. And I don't think Secretary Blinken had it in the cards to change that.
All right, Steve, thank you so much for coming on, for your insights. I always appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Former President Trump is back in a Manhattan courtroom today for his hush money trial. The former president spoke to reporters on his way into court, saying that he was disappointed to be in court on his wife's birthday.
I want to start by wishing my wife, Melania, a very happy birthday. Nice to be with her, but I'm in a courthouse for a rigged trial. It's a rigged trial. Terrible. But we're doing very well in this rigged trial. Everybody knows it.
Well, defense lawyers continue to cross-examine former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker. His testimony thus far has centered around helping bury potentially embarrassing stories about Trump during the 2016 campaign. The former president and his legal team deny any wrongdoing. Well, Republican attorneys general from 17 states, led by Tennessee and Arkansas, are challenging a new Biden administration abortion rule. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission recently added it to a law requiring employers to provide reasonable workplace accommodations, such as extra breaks for pregnant women. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now to explain. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. The EEOC claims that the new rule, which goes into effect in mid-June, simply clarifies the provisions for the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, which became law last June after Congress passed it as part of a government spending package. But pro-life lawmakers who voted for it say the Biden administration is simply trying to use it as a vehicle to make abortions available even in states where they are not legal.
We passed a bill which both Democrats and Republicans agreed did not touch abortion.
You've got an administration that takes a very, very liberal view and clearly doesn't view innocent life as worthy of being protected, and that is reflected in their policies.
Democrats contend the law has been clear from the start and blame Republicans from trying to limit abortion access.
Republicans contend that the unpopularity of their extreme anti-abortion position is simply a messaging problem, not a policy problem. That if they just talk more about it, then they'll be fine.
But during floor debate on the bill in December of 2022, Democrat co-sponsor Senator Bob Casey, a Catholic, made clear abortion accommodations were not included.
Under the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC, could not issue any regulation that requires abortion leave, nor does the Act permit the EEOC to require employers to provide abortion leave in violation of state law.
But the EEOC recently updated the rule, quote, "With respect to abortion, the PWFA's requirements are narrow and will likely concern only a request by a qualified employee for leave from work." Melanie Israel with the Heritage Foundation argues the rules go beyond the scope of the law that passed with bipartisan support.
That is not at all what that law was designed to do. And in fact, many of the members of Congress who had signed on to that law specifically told the administration, no, that is not what we meant at all. And the administration, unfortunately, ignored that.
And those state attorneys generals who filed the lawsuit add that this accommodation will increase costs for businesses, and the law was never intended to cover abortion services, as you heard. Pro-life lawmakers say that the way that they wrote the bill's language, the EEOC will end up losing in court. But I'll stay on top of the issue. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says that his state will not comply to changes the Biden administration made to Title IX.
We are not going to let Joe Biden try to inject men into women's activities. We are not going to let Joe Biden undermine the rights of parents. And we are not going to let Joe Biden abuse his constitutional authority to try to impose these policies on us here in Florida.
The White House redefined the prohibition on sex discrimination in education to include discrimination based on a person's so-called gender identity. Lawyers have warned that the changes could affect state laws on women's sports and locker rooms. So lawmakers in Tennessee have approved a measure to penalize adults who help minors receive so-called gender-affirming care without their parents' consent. The first in the nation proposal is headed to the Republican governor's desk. Bill Lee, who has not commented publicly on the measure, but is expected to sign it into law. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including unrest on campus. We take a deeper dive into the pro-Palestinian protest sweeping college campuses across the U.S. and the world.
The reason for our demo today is to come here to implore Israel to stop the famine that it's created in Gaza, and to end the killing that it's doing in Gaza, and to stop that right now.
That right there is human rights activist Brian Wald. He is part of a group of American and Israeli rabbis who demonstrated today in southern Israel near the border of the Gaza Strip. As you can see, Israeli police blocked the protesters and also made some arrests. Well, what started as a pro-Palestinian rally on the campus of Columbia University has now gone global. In central Paris, dozens of students at Sciences Po blocked the main building. Many have said that they want the university to investigate all ties with Israel as well as condemn its actions in Gaza. Some students said the protests on U.S. campuses inspired their movement. Well, in Gaza, Palestinian children sent a message to campus protesters.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We love you.
The U.S. nonprofit Reach Education Fund released the video. The organization manages a camp in southern Gaza, which provides immediate relief services such as tents, hot meals, and hygiene kits. Well, there are no signs the pro-Palestinian protests in the U.S. are ending anytime soon. As you can see right here from this map, campuses throughout the country are following Columbia University's lead. They are demanding the school cut ties with Israeli institutions. The University of Southern California actually canceled its main commencement next month, citing new safety measures. And here with more on the unrest, that is, that we are witnessing on college campuses nationwide, is Stephanie Barclay, professor at the University of Notre Dame School of Law and an expert on free speech and religious exercise. Stephanie, good to be with you today. First, let's talk about freedom of speech and maybe where that line oversteps and when schools need to step in and regulate or stop these actions.
Sure. So for generations, college students have engaged in protests to express their views, to draw attention to issues that they care about and participate in important public conversations. And as tensions in the U.S. have raised after the October 7th Hamas attacks on Israel and the subsequent war in Gaza, we've seen many students engaging in First Amendment peaceful, protected speech and protests. But we've also seen students engaging in severe campus disruption and even in acts of violence, which are not protected by the First Amendment.
And Stephanie, let's talk about the difference between free speech and hate speech and where that line is drawn.
So in our country, in the United States, we don't recognize as a distinct category hate speech. The freedom of speech includes speech that can be very divisive and hateful and offensive to many. But where we do draw the line is between speech and expression versus unprotected conduct, particularly things like true threats and intimidation, incitement to imminent violence, discriminatory harassment, or substantially disrupting events or deplatforming speakers. Those sorts of activities are not protected by the First Amendment, and they really undermine the core purposes of a university.
And let's talk about the universities here and maybe their responsibility when it comes to protests like this and when they do step in and take action. How may that be different from, say, public schools versus private institutions?
As a constitutional matter, the First Amendment only applies to public universities, meaning government-owned universities. There are important reasons why we might let private universities, like a religious university, for example, restrict some speech on its campus that is contrary to its private mission. But virtually all private universities also include robust policies that protect freedom of speech voluntarily on their campuses, and for good reason. These universities recognize that freedom of speech is an indispensable part of human dignity, progress, and liberty. And allowing freedom of speech on campuses is necessary to facilitate real learning and challenging ideas in the pursuit of truth.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on today and sorting this all out for us. We really appreciate your expertise. God bless you.
Thanks for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Embracing the Faith. Learn more about the Holy Father's message to nearly 50,000 pilgrims at the Vatican. Plus, find out why people will be marching in Washington, D.C. this weekend for persecuted Christians. Jim Caviezel and former ambassador at large for international religious freedom, Sam Brownback, are headlining the annual March for the Martyrs tomorrow in the nation's capital. The rally kicks off at 3 p.m. on the National Mall, followed by the march. Around 365 million Christians are persecuted each year, with that number on the rise. Recently, we spoke with a founder of the March for the Martyrs. And here with more is the founder of the event, Gia Chacon. Gia, great to be with you today. Tell us a little bit more about this year's march. I know you have some pretty big, heavy hitters that are headlining the event.
March for the Martyrs is happening on Saturday. And yes, Tracy, we are very excited that Jim Caviezel will be joining us as a keynote speaker. So the march begins on the National Mall with a kickoff rally, and then we will move through the streets of Washington and end with a night of prayer for the persecuted at the Museum of the Bible, which is where we will hear from Jim Caviezel alongside Ambassador Sam Brownback, the former ambassador at large for international religious freedom. We'll also hear from survivors of persecution, as well as other experts on the issue. And this year, we are focusing particularly on Armenia, Iran, and Nigeria.
And Gia, tell us why you're doing that. Why those countries?
Well, right now, Tracy, many people don't know that there is another genocide happening in Armenia. We had Azerbaijan go into a historically Armenian region, Artsakh or Nagorno-Karabakh. And as a result of this invasion, over 120,000 Christian Armenians were pushed out of their homes. Their history was destroyed. And this was an attempt at an ethnic cleansing of the Armenian Christians who have been in this region for hundreds of years. And even before it was Armenian Christian, Armenians had inhabited this land. So that is happening right now. And it is completely overlooked by the mainstream media. It's also gone under the radar, or supposedly under the radar, of the Biden administration. They're not doing enough to protect Christians in Armenia. So we're focusing a lot on in our program on what's happening there. We're also focusing on Nigeria, because according to a report that was released by InterSociety, which is a nonprofit organization on the ground in the country, over 8,000 Christians were slaughtered in 2023 alone in Nigeria. And yet this country is not a country of particular concern for the United States State Department. So we're bringing attention to what's happening there. And then in Iran, there's ongoing human rights abuses, but particularly for the church, it's illegal to convert to Christianity and it's illegal to evangelize. And as a result of this, many Christians are being imprisoned and even sentenced to death because of their faith.
And Gia, I know you've been holding this march every year to bring awareness to Christian persecution. Talk to us about how it's grown through the years and what type of impact it's been having.
Well, it is absolutely beautiful to see Christians of all denominations and all ages come together as one voice for the persecuted. We've seen this movement grow every single year. We are able to bring in more groups. And what's beautiful about it, Tracy, is it's not just Catholics. It's not just, you know, evangelicals from the D.C. area. It also brings in Orthodox communities. Armenian Christians come. We have Assyrian Christians from Iraq that participate in the march. Nigerian Christians, Christians from Ethiopia. So it's beautiful to see just the diversity in the crowd. And it really is a picture and a reflection of the global body of Christ. So we love seeing that, and we love seeing that grow each year. But also through our social media efforts and our different ways that we're raising awareness, March for the Martyrs has really been able to lead the movement in bringing awareness throughout different social media channels.
Gia, thank you for starting it. We appreciate it. Thank you for speaking with us, and good luck with the march this weekend.
Thank you, Tracy.
Pope Francis recently met in St. Peter's Square with tens of thousands of pilgrims from all over Italy. They are part of a lay Catholic group using a hands-on approach to spreading the gospel. EWTN Vatican Bureau Chief Andreas Tannhauser has more.
Poco fa, passando in mezzo a voi,
just now, passing through your midst, I met eyes filled with joy and hope. Thank you for this intense and beautiful embrace.
Pope Francis met in St. Peter's Square with 50,000 members of Azione Cattolica, Catholic Action, coming from all over Italy. Founded in 1868, this popular lay association provides a pathway for human and spiritual development to individuals of all ages, rooted in the gospel. With Open Arms was the title of the gathering held at the Vatican, aiming to emphasize the importance of walking together and engaging with today's men and women. In his address, the Holy Father reflected on the value of embracing one another and the power of his gesture to bring people together.
quando l'abbraccio si trasforma in un pugno è molto pericoloso.
When an embrace turns into a fist, it becomes very dangerous. Often, wars originate from missed or rejected embraces, followed by prejudices, misunderstandings, suspicions, until the other is seen as an enemy. Unfortunately, all of this is happening right before our eyes, in too many parts of the world.
Pope Francis also spoke about the embrace of Christ and the saving embrace of faith. Jesus showed us that embrace, the Holy Father continued, by dying on the cross and giving his life for us.
Fratelli, sorelli, lasciamoci abbracciare dal Signore.
Brothers and sisters, let us allow ourselves to be embraced by him, like children. Let us allow ourselves to be embraced by him like children. Each of us has something childlike in our hearts that needs an embrace. Let us allow ourselves to be embraced by the Lord. Thus, in the embrace of the Lord, we learn to embrace others.
The Pope urged everyone to make charity the guiding principle, capable of influencing every endeavor and service to remain faithful to the Association's vocation and history, and to implement tangible signs of change across all aspects of social life. In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser, EWTN News Nightly.
Finally tonight, Catholic schools played a big role in the first round of the NFL draft in Detroit. Yesterday, we told you all about Joe Alt, the Catholic offensive lineman from Notre Dame. Well, he went fifth to the Los Angeles Chargers, and they are coached by Jim Harbaugh, who spoke earlier this year at the March for Life. Caleb Williams, the number one overall pick by the Chicago Bears, graduated from the Jesuit Gonzaga College High School right here in the nation's capital, and one of his Gonzaga teammates went 11th overall. Congratulations, and God bless them all. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.